This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble important and sometimes under-the-radar stories that affect you. I'm Alethea Kasman.
And I'm Shayna Roth. The Iowa primary has come and gone, which means we are officially in the 2024 election season. And in Michigan, our primary is getting moved up this year, which is sure to cause all kinds of drama.
Yes, the National Democratic Party switched up its order for its primary elections this year, so they haven't even gotten started yet. So while this year, you know, President Joe Biden's not really facing a contested election for the nomination, the idea with Michigan being one of the first is to sort of diversify the order of these first states and bring, you know, more attention to them.
And primaries, they can be a really good weather vane for measuring enthusiasm among voters on both sides, testing out technology, and doing things like looking for weaknesses in planning, which is something that a lot of voters have been concerned about, or at least have expressed concerns about in recent years.
And there's a lot, you know, to test in Michigan this year, given the changes that we saw in our Constitution back in 2022 when that was approved. And one of the big things is early voting. So everyone statewide will see 9 days of in-person early voting at least before the February 27th election. So for administrators, your clerks, the people who work for them, that means more planning, bringing on more staff. And for voters, it means hopefully some more flexibility and, you know, shorter lines if, you know, that's something that you deal with in your community.
Then there's also the ghosts of election 2020 past that have been looming over every election since, possibly none more so than the upcoming one, because it is really gearing up to be this deja vu with former President Donald Trump going against current President Joe Biden. We know now that Wayne County was a major target of attempts to not certify the 2020 election. The Republican Party is currently being run by plenty of leaders who believe the lie that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump. This is something that is just looming so large and heavy over this upcoming election.
You're right, Shayna. We are not done with these claims of voter fraud. Many, all that come with, you know, no real proof. It is definitely looming over us like a dark cloud, whether you're a reporter or someone working in elections. And with the likely rematch this year between President Biden and former President Trump, we are likely to get some more.
And so keeping all of this in mind, we spoke with Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson about the 2024 election and the concerns about this false narrative. Here's part of what she said about that.
The facts are completely contrary to the myth of the misinformation. You know, we know that the biggest antidote to the lies and misinformation is transparency and facts. And so you'll see clerks all around our state doing more than ever before to host forums to talk about our elections, to invite people to see the testing of the voting machines, that they can feel confident that they're secure, working with our office to get more information to voters about all these new changes in a proactive way, so that if lies follow, at least citizens have access to the real information first.
We spoke more with Secretary Benson about the 2024 election, early voting, and so much more. We'll get into all of that right after this break.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Alethea Kasman.
And I'm Shayna Roth, and we're joined now by Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. Welcome, Secretary Benson.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So to start off, Michigan's primary has moved up to February 27th. What has been your reaction to that change? I mean, do you think this is a good thing for Michigan?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I look at it as, you know, the legislature's prerogative to set the date. Our job as election administrators is to build the infrastructure to make it happen. And so we looked at it not as much as, you know, other than wanting clarity as to what the date was going to be, because that's also what we have to provide for voters. You know, my audience are the voters in this state. And so my goal is to give them as much clarity as I can about how to cast their vote and when to do it. So I'm grateful. Once we had that clarity, great. And we moved to implementing everything we needed to do from early voting, which is the big change that we're launching with the presidential primary, to a number of other things and specific things clerks need help with. And of course, the funding that came with the change in the date and the other changes the legislature made has been really helpful to help us prepare, not just for this presidential primary, but for all three statewide elections we've got this year.
Do you have any concerns from a preparedness standpoint, or is everything pretty smooth sailing so far?
You know, we have a saying on our team, as we've done this now, this is our third major election cycle. We hope for the best and plan for the worst. And we've modified that to say hope for the best and plan for every contingency, because that's really what we do. And so when, especially when you have, and we went through this in 2020, a number of new things, particularly early voting, we have to be very mindful and careful, not just about the newness of it, but that the challenges and the anxiety that can create for our election administrators who've been under an extraordinary amount of pressure these last several years and have really stepped up and met the moment in every way. And then secondly, making sure voters have that confidence and clarity about early voting in particular and a number of other things, the expanded drop boxes, the permanent absentee voting list. So with everything this year, the date of the election, frankly, is the least of our worries. The bigger challenges are making sure that we are doing everything our clerks need and our voters need to implement all of these new election laws, as well as the older ones like no reason absentee voting and election day registration, smoothly and have the resource to do it. The good news is, you know, math and data helps a lot. And so we know if we can predict turnout, if we can predict who's going to use what method, we can really plan for anything. And the great thing is that we have such great partners among our clerks and now in many ways in lawmakers, that the more good people we have working together to execute the voters' vision for these changes and these policies, which is really what it is, the more successful we're going to be.
So you mentioned it a couple of times, early voting is starting here. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what this means for voters and, you know, why is this required now?
Well, yeah, citizens enacted early voting in our state constitution in the November 2022 election. And so what that has done is mandate at least 9 days of early in-person voting before every statewide election. That means at least 5 weekdays and 2 weekends before every election day, making our traditional election day still one where people can vote in their home precinct, but providing a new option for citizens to vote in person, seeing their ballot go through the machine and be counted and leaving with their I voted sticker anytime those 9 days or sometimes even more days before election day. That means citizens can walk in and vote at an early voting center, even on a Sunday, not just drop off their ballot like they did before in the absentee voting period. And we anticipate this will hopefully build voters' confidence in, if they choose to vote early, in their processes, because they'll be able to see their ballot counted and see, just as they would on election day, that number move and have confidence it's been logged. But at the same time, it's a new method of voting. It's one, frankly, that 20 other states have done, but it's new for Michigan. And so with that creates a lot of challenges, but also opportunities to educate citizens about this method, to ensure our clerks are fully ready to implement it, and to give voters confidence that when they choose, if they choose this method, their vote will count and will be as secure as any other method they could choose.
So early voting, I think, is, you know, clearly one of the bigger changes from the 2022 ballot proposal. You know, what else process-wise is changing this year, and what, you know, might that change for voters?
Well, a number of things that went into our preparations for this point have already been checked off, meaning new and expanded drop boxes were another part of the proposal. We're now mandated to have one drop box for every 15,000 voters in the state. So that means acquiring the funds to get our clerks to purchase these drop boxes and to make sure they're installed in a way that is secure with constant monitoring, all of which we've done now. And so we're there on that. prepaid postage is a great thing. So now a voter does not have to pay postage for their choice to mail in their mail in their ballot, or even use a stamp to request a ballot. That is now no longer a thing. You can get prepaid postage for that. And so we set up accounts with our Postal Service for every jurisdiction so that all they have to do is let the Postal Service know how many stamps a clerk needs to pay for, and the Postal Service charges the state for that amount. So all those different technical things, and there's a number of them, have all gone into place as we prepare for an election cycle starting in February, where these, under our constitutional mandate, these new changes have to be ready to go for our voters and have to be smooth as they're executed for every one of our citizens around the state.
Now, possibly throwing a wrench in a lot of this, is there's these two special House elections in Westland and Warren areas. So there's two more elections for some voters in an already busy year. Is this going to be a challenge for election administrators?
Oh, yeah, certainly. It's a challenge. But again, challenges are our middle name in the election industry. Like, we embrace these challenges that can occur through new policies. They can occur through new special elections, or they can emerge on election day if people are disruptive at a polling place. So we again define ourselves by our ability to meet these challenges and not just accomplish a smooth and successful election, but use that experience to become better and more prepared for the next challenge that comes our way. And so with these special elections, I think our biggest challenge is twofold. One, making sure our clerks have the support and tools they need manage a election in January or in April in the midst of this statewide election cycle. But at the same time, make sure voters know, especially in where you have overlapping dates of absentee voting, what election they're participating in, of their opportunities to participate in the special election, and working with clerks to help get that voter education into the hands of their constituents so that they have the ability to participate in special elections just as they would in a statewide.
Well, not to double down on this idea of challenges in your office, but how, are you dealing with the redraw of these seven House districts and the Senate ones that will come in a little bit? This is, coming months before the filing deadline for House candidates running in 2024. I mean, it's a tight deadline for, you to get everything you need to get done for 2024 House elections, right?
Well, again, the Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission is actually charged with drawing those districts, and the court that they're working with has a timeline that we've advised is from an administrative standpoint, because our job is on the back end after the districts are decided, after all the determinations are made. Our job is to enter that essentially into the system so that clerks and voters know which district they're voting in and that the system is set up for that. So as this moves forward, that the timeline that clerks I'm sorry, the timeline the Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission and the court have aligned on aligns with the needs of the Bureau of Elections and our clerks to implement those new district lines. There is a small caveat if there are split precincts where you have one precinct and splitting over two districts, where it'll take a little bit more programming and maybe a little bit more time. But that is something we're also mindful of and prepared for. One of the marks of my entire tenure, frankly, as Secretary of State, has been dealing with a lot of challenges like this, as I mentioned, and so we're just used to it at this point. and with this particular issue, my biggest focus is always, affirming voters are aware of what district they're in, giving candidates what they need to participate as they so choose. But I think the timeline that the court and the independent commission are aligned on is one that will enable us to do all of that at this point.
The 2020 election in some ways feels like a lifetime ago, but we're still feeling the tumult that it caused. What are you doing to combat this ongoing narrative, this narrative that seems to refuse to die, that our elections are not secure?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be helpful if politicians stopped fueling it. That would make it go, because the facts are completely contrary to the myth of the misinformation. But we've done two things, and I should again commend our clerks for really stepping into this moment. One, we know that the biggest antidote to the lies and misinformation is transparency and facts. And so you'll see clerks all around our state doing more than ever before to host forums to talk about our elections, to invite people to see the testing of the voting machines, that they can feel confident that they're secure. And, you know, similarly working with our office to get more information to voters about all these new changes in a proactive way, so that if lies follow, at least citizens have access to the real information first. The second thing we've done, and something that we learned in 2020, we went into 2020 really focusing on election officials as the trusted voices for election facts. And of course, the challenge emerged when the targets of the lies were election officials and trying to harm people's view of their integrity and their commitment to the law. And, you know, obviously myself included, but certainly our local officials as well were targeted. And so recognizing that, we have expanded the universe of trusted voices for 2024, launching voter confidence councils around the state where we are engaging faith leaders, business leaders, community leaders, labor leaders, educators, and many others, young people, to be equipped with the truth about our elections, how to vote, where to get more information, to be our eyes and ears on the ground if they're hearing rumors so that we can address them, and overall just serve as these ambassadors of facts around our elections in the spheres of influence that they occupy. That is helping us to reach more people in a non-political way, certainly in a non-partisan way, in a way that helps us, we hope, build confidence from and through the voices of people who aren't certainly anywhere near the political arena and are closer to other arenas like sports and athletes, and can instead just say, this is how it works. This is why you should have faith in the system. And then secondly, we're continuing to invite people to be part of the system, serving as election workers themselves through these trusted voices. So if people want to see up close and personal just how secure our process is, they're welcome to actually work the process and see for themselves.
However, there is this issue of far-right extremists who promote the myth that elections are not secure running for local clerk positions, sort of trying to put the fox in the hen house when it comes to this issue. How have you and your office been dealing with that?
It's interesting. Michigan is not alone in that regard. We see that happening in Arizona and in Georgia. And there's one story of an election official in Arizona who ran in furtherance of the misinformation, got into the office, saw that actually firsthand that the system actually worked well, and then was met with his own barrage of threats and harassment because he refused to continue the misinformation. So I look at that as kind of the way in which that story would unfold if and when it comes to Michigan. If you see someone who's running, who is an avowed sort of furthering misinformation, for the most part, most people will see, because the facts continue to reinstitute this, that our elections are secure, and then it becomes harder and harder to facilitate a lie. Not impossible. We see people, you know, gaining lots of celebrity and raising a lot of money off of that lie. And so that in that way, it's always going to be out there. It's always going to be attractive to some individuals seeking to leverage wealth and celebrity to advance themselves. They'll use this misinformation to do so. And that's a reality of the moment that we're in. But the vast majority of people that we've worked with and the majority of incidents have really shown, because truth and the law is on our side, that will ultimately push through these challenges. At the end of the day, it's going to be up to voters to elect people from both parties who are telling them the truth and not going to manipulate or lie in order to look better or refuse to accept an election that they didn't win. And it's also going to be up to voters to, you know, call out leaders for lying to them and really demand more from people asking for their vote, and demand that they also speak the truth to them, because it's the ultimate, in my view, sign of disrespect if you can't have a politician tell someone the truth about an election, whether they won or lost it. My hope is that more and more people of integrity will be ascending to these positions, as we're seeing by and large happen in many places, than people who are ascending to positions based on lies.
We learned, you know, relatively recently in the last month or so, through Detroit News reporting, that former President Donald Trump communicated with Wayne County Board of Canvassers about certifying the election, asking them, you know, to change their vote on certification. I know you posted that this day in particular in 2020, when that meeting happened, was sort of a down day for you in the 2020 cycle. Certainly it was, a crazy moment for me too that stands out. You know, what was your reaction when you saw that report that this phone call, this communication actually happened?
I was not surprised. My immediate reaction was, who has had this recording and why has it only come out now, 3 years later? Like, who sits on this for 3 years and why? It was not a surprise that the call happened. It was not, the content of the call was not a surprise. It was certainly gratifying that you had this additional piece of evidence, because in many ways, that's the battle that we're engaged in. And the best counter to the misinformation is facts and truth, that having additional evidence of, in this case, a real concerted effort to overturn the will of the people, and the intent behind that, to refuse to accept valid election results and try to stop them from being certified. That's only made more apparent when evidence like this emerges. I certainly don't think it's the last piece of evidence we'll see emerge either, because I imagine there's more out there. But again, I wish that a lot of this evidence had come forth sooner, because I think it does help us counter the false narrative that's out there instead simply just present the facts.
So 2024 has barely started, but because everything is constantly at a frantic pace, let's pivot just a little bit to 2026. This is going to be your last term as Secretary mm-hmm. of State. When you think about 2026, do you see yourself running for something else? Maybe something like governor, attorney general? Like, what is
the... You know, it's hard to think about 2026 when we're in the middle of 2024. Seriously, you've got, certainly yeah. I've loved my job. As you know, as anyone who's like seen me around the state for the last few decades, this has been my life's work. I feel incredibly blessed to be able to not just oversee our elections and protect the process in this time, but also to take this State Department that when I came in, there were, long lines at our branch offices, 5-hour waits for families with kids to simply change their address on their driver's license. And we've completely transformed this agency and made it one that touches every single citizen and resident of the state and ensures they're getting the type of customer service and efficient government services they deserve. And my vision for state government is that that's what we should be seeing across the board, and DHHS and the delivery of unemployment benefits in so many different ways, helping businesses get started. Government should work well, it should be efficient, and then it should get out of the way and let people prosper and give them the support they need to do that, and then also just, not get in the way when they do that. And that's what we've demonstrated is possible with the changes we've made in our department. And so that's certainly on my mind as we look to, how can I continue to serve and what can I continue to help improve for our state. And it's been really encouraging that I'll be traveling around the state, and more than people want to talk about voting in democracy, people will come up and say, it was so easy to get my driver's license renewed. I was able to renew my tabs when I was doing grocery shopping. That's great to be able to deliver those results to citizens in a very non-political, just in a good government way. And I love the idea of continuing to do that more, throughout our state and throughout all of state government. So we'll see.
All right. Awesome. Well, Secretary Benson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Thanks again to Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson for joining us today. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin. Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyon. Please make sure you tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash and how much you like it. Send them a link and be sure to X about us. Is that what we're calling it these days? Instagram us, share us. We are also on YouTube. Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to wdet.org/give and become a member of WDET at wdet.org.